Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, February 8th, 2022. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MDC gives $1.73 million to expansion. Funds to purchase right-of-way for Todd Drive, Loop 250 Overpass, by Mella McEwen. Plans to expand Todd Drive and construct an overpass at Todd Drive and Loop 250 have gotten a significant financial boost from the Midland Development Corporation. At the MDC's monthly board meeting Monday, board members agreed to pay $1.73 million to acquire right-of-way and design an interchange at Loop 250 and Todd Drive. MDC Executive Director Sarah Harris told board members the funds will purchase right-of-way to expand Todd Drive from Business 20 to Golf Course Road, from Golf Course Road to Fairgrounds Road to Todd Drive, and along Todd Drive from Loop 250 to Occidental Parkway. The money will also fund engineering and design work for an overpass at Loop 250 and Todd Drive. Harris said the funding should help accelerate funding from Texas Department of Transportation for the project. She added that the initial plan was to contribute $1.5 million, but the additional money made sense. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton said the contribution from MDC will help the city in its efforts to expand Todd Drive and the interchange, but also develop the Outer Loop 250 down to Business 20. He said it will also help leverage not only funding from TxDOT, but funding from the Permian Basin Metropolitan Planning Organization. MDC continues spaceport-related contract. Board members also authorized the continuation of a contract between MDC and Interflight Global Corporation for Interflight services in procuring new tenants for the Spaceport Business Park. The amount of the contract is $139,650. Harris said this is the fourth year MDC has worked with Interflight. Just last year, she said, the company had put MDC in contact with 24 aerospace companies, some of whom the MDC hoped to attract to Midland. She explained that the company serves to promote the Spaceport Business Park and act as an intermediary between aerospace companies and the MDC. Stephen Lowry, chairman of the MDC board, noted that the organization had tried to do such work in-house, but found working with Interflight to be more cost-effective and efficient. Board members also approved an agreement with Strong Environmental Services for Strong Environmental to perform asbestos assessment, lead paint assessment, and Phase 1 environmental site assessment at the two J.L. Davis properties the MDC just purchased. The two properties are located at 211 North Colorado Street and 210 North Big Spring Street. The Strong Environmental contract is for $35,115. This article is entitled, Airport Plan Includes Rental Car Facility, Parking Garage. Estimates for structure are around $25 million, by Stuart Doreen. A consolidated rental car center could be coming to Midland International Airport. Justine Ruff, Director of Airports for the City of Midland, stated this week that airport officials have a longer-term plan to build a structure on half of the lot just west of the covered parking area, a little farther out from the terminal than covered parking. The idea would be to build a structure with a parking garage. Rental cars would be located on the first floors. Public parking would be allowed above that. The consolidated rental car center is something that is offered in other airports, and the current rental car companies at Midland International are in favor of the concept, Ruff said. Initial estimates put a cost of the structure at around $25 million. No general fund money would be spent on the facility, Ruff said. The rental car companies at Midland International will collect a facility charge fee for people renting vehicles. Other revenue used could include money that would go into airport accounts because of drilling on airport lands, like the production set to take place at Air Park in North Midland. The FAA requires that any revenue collected from drilling on airport land to stay at the airport. Midland International also is collecting millions in parking at the airport right now. The city reports collecting $1.39 million in net parking revenue in the first quarter of this fiscal year. Another potential revenue source for this project, or something else at Midland International Airport or Air Park, is the money generated from the selling of property north of Midland. The FAA is allowing for the selling of 2,600 acres that Ruff said has been drilled up heavily, so it wouldn't be highly lucrative. The land, she said, has been appraised about $6 million to $7 million. That money is airport money, said Ruff, who updated the Midland City Council at a recent planning session on the intention to sell the land as a priority for the upcoming fiscal year. Ruff said officials are looking at the construction of the Consolidated Car Center happening in around 5 years. She added that the recent development of other lots created the space to allow for construction. City leaders have green-lighted the design phase. This article is entitled Midland International to Get Sixth Gate on South End. Addition means airline carriers will each have two gates, by Stuart Doreen. Midland International Airport is set to get a sixth gate. The addition will provide American Airlines with a second gate, thus giving all three carriers two gates at Midland International. Currently, American, Southwest, and United operate at the airport. The new gate will be located on the south end of the terminal and will be up and running in a few weeks, according to Justine Ruff, Director of Airports of the City of Midland. Ruff said a federal grant allowed airport officials to replace jet bridges at Midland International, and there was extra money that allowed airport officials to add a jet bridge to the facility. Currently, Midland International is experiencing a rebound in the number of passengers flying in and out of the region. Through the first quarter of the fiscal year, the number of people who boarded an airline at Midland International reached 148,710, a 71.7% increase over the first quarter of fiscal year 2020-21. The number of passengers in December was the third most in a December in the past 10 years. Southwest flight to Austin in March. Ruff said that the Southwest Airlines nonstop flight to and from Austin begins March 10th. She said the flight will be convenient for business travelers as it leaves Midland in the morning and returns at night. She also said that Midlanders and people in the Permian Basin need to use the flight because, quote, if the flight doesn't make money for them, they will not continue it, unquote. Currently, there are airline flights leaving Midland for both airports in Dallas, both airports in Houston, and airports in Las Vegas, Denver, and Phoenix, Ruff said. Southwest has the largest percentage of those flying out of Midland International, 45.5% in the first quarter of the fiscal year. This article is entitled America's Warrior Partnership, PSP Collaborate to Meet Needs of Veterans. Initiative aims to enhance efforts, services for local veterans, families, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. America's Warrior Partnership, AWP, and the Permian Strategic Partnership, PSP, announced Monday an alliance to increase support for the 20,000 veterans across the Permian Basin area. The partnership will provide unique community support for local veterans through the Community Integration Model, a nationally recognized program of AWP. Every veteran community has unique needs and challenges. By partnering with the Permian Strategic Partnership, we will be able to truly understand how we can help and support this veteran population by enhancing the efficacy of community resources to meet those needs, said Jim Lorraine, President and CEO of America's Warrior Partnership. We are thrilled to be partnering with Permian Basin communities and the veterans that call this area home, and we look forward to all of the work we can do together. America's Warrior Partnership is a national veteran organization that focuses on an upstream approach to proactively know the veterans in the community and connect them with local resources and opportunities. AWP ensures greater access to services and opportunity by partnering with local leaders and the full scope of support organizations, VA, local and regional resources, educational, employment, faith-based, recreational, etc., to provide coordinated, holistic care to veterans and improve their quality of life. The community analysis funded by the PSP and performed by AWP found the area's existing support for the veteran population could be enhanced and bolstered by creating its own unique program customized to the needs of local veterans. Through this partnership, AWP will build and implement this customized programming utilizing the community integration model within the Permian Basin communities to proactively connect with the veteran population and ensure access to quality services and opportunities. AWP will work to create a strong and engaged military community that keeps residents connected and thriving. Reaching our veteran population is a priority for the PSP, and we are pleased to bring America's Warrior Partnership to the Permian Basin to deploy programming customized to fit the needs of veterans in our region, said Tracy Bentley, President and CEO of the PSP. Veterans across the Permian Basin represent an essential part of our culture, and we are deeply invested in improving their quality of life by helping them meet their goals and dreams. We know this partnership will allow us to achieve these objectives, and we look forward to seeing our military community grow while strengthening the whole region in the process. For more information on America's Warrior Partnership and their community integration efforts in the Permian Basin and across the country, subscribe to America's Warrior Partnership newsletter by visiting americaswarriorpartnership.org. This article is entitled "Midlander Arrested in Connection with Drive-By Shooting" by Mercedes Cordero. A Midland man is being held on a $1 million bond in connection to a March 2021 drive-by shooting in southeast Midland. Arturo Reyes, 30, is facing a first-degree murder charge in the death of Gerardo Ramirez, 53. Midland police were dispatched on March 13, 2021, in reference to a gunshot victim. The victim, identified as Ramirez, was taken to Midland Memorial Hospital and later transported to Lubbock. He died March 30, 2021, as a result of the injuries sustained from the drive-by shooting, according to a previous Reporter Telegram report. After talking to witnesses and receiving Crime Stoppers tips, Midland police were able to identify two suspects involved, according to an arrest affidavit. One of the suspects led MPD in a vehicle pursuit days after the shooting. The vehicle was identified as the vehicle used in the drive-by, according to the arrest affidavit. Both suspects admitted to being involved in the shooting. When interviewing one of the suspects, detectives learned Reyes owned the gun and was the driver of the vehicle during the shooting, according to the arrest affidavit. MPD was also contacted by the Lincoln City Police Department in reference to the shooting. Lincoln City PD received information about Reyes' involvement with the shooting in Midland, according to the arrest affidavit. According to the tip, Reyes was overheard saying, "I know I hit that guy, and I ran away when I saw the police lights." Reyes was arrested February 2nd on a murder warrant. Authorities have not disclosed if another suspect has been charged in the case. This article is entitled MPD Investigates Homicide at Midland Hotel by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Midland police are searching for a suspect in a homicide at a Midland hotel. The Midland Police Department reported that at 11:42 a.m. Sunday, officials responded to 3100 West Wall Street in reference to a male found deceased in his hotel room. The victim was later identified as 54-year-old male David Edward Demick. During the investigation, detectives determined that the suspect entered the victim's room at around 2 a.m. and exited several hours later after a physical altercation with the victim had ensued, according to Midland Police. The suspect is a black male, last seen wearing a black sweatshirt, black sweatpants, gray beanie, and gold necklace. The investigation is still ongoing. If there is any information on the suspect, please contact Midland Police Department at 432-685-7108 or leave an anonymous tip at 694-TIPS. This article is entitled USGS Reports Another Quake Near Odessa by Mercedes Cordero. The U.S. Geological Survey reported another earthquake near northeast Odessa Monday morning. The USGS reported a 2.9 magnitude quake at 6:19 a.m. The quake took place about 6 miles north-northeast of Odessa with a depth of 4.3 miles, according to the USGS. Monday's quake is the fifth in the past 7 days. The quakes range from 2.0 to 2.9. EarthquakeTrack.com reported 20 total quakes around Midland, Odessa. That includes near Big Spring and Lamesa in the last 30 days, and 252 in the last 365 days. This article is entitled Sheriff's Office Wants Your Ex-Valentines by Mercedes Cordero. The Midland County Sheriff's Office wants your ex-Valentines. The Sheriff's Office posted on its Facebook a Valentine's Day weekend special that will allow for Midland County residents to call in their exes with warrants or if they are engaged in illegal activity. The special includes a set of limited edition platinum or red bracelets, free transportation with a chauffeur, and a one-night minimum stay in luxurious accommodations, according to the MCSO report. The special also includes professional glamour shots that will be posted online. This special is capped off with a special Valentine's weekend dinner. MCSO joined neighboring agency Odessa Police Department in the Valentine's Day weekend special. A sister law enforcement agency has come up with quite an idea for Valentine's Day, and Sheriff Kreiner is going to extend their idea to the citizens of Midland County, MCSO posted on their Facebook. Interested in the special? Call 432-688-4600 with your ex-Valentine's location. This is the community page. This article is entitled O'Rourke Talks 5-Point Plan to Prevent a Power Crisis by J.C. Lewis. Odessa. Gubernatorial candidate Beto O'Rourke visited Friday night for the Keeping the Lights On, a statewide drive for a brighter Texas, which will hold events in 20 communities across the state. About 70 people showed up to listen to the Democrat talk about last year's February freeze and 5 points he would instigate if elected governor to prevent another blackout freeze. The first point would be to winterize the power grid, including the gas supply. The second point was to connect to the national grid. Where I live in El Paso, though it got pretty cold and maybe nearly as cold as in Odessa, we didn't lose power, O'Rourke said. The lights stayed on and the water kept running because we are connected to the rest of the electricity grid in the United States. So when we have issues with capacity, or we're not generating enough to reach our customers, or don't have enough fuel to reach those customers, we can draw down electricity from the rest of the country. He said the great thing about connecting to the grid in other states is that not only in times of need can the lights stay on, but when Texas is producing more than it needs for customers, it can send electricity to another state. The insult to injury for this is the fact that we are all paying higher electricity bills now because of what happened, he said. O'Rourke said, if elected governor, he wants to send money back to the ratepayers to help fix the damage that occurred during the storm and help make the cost of living lower during a time of higher inflation. Point number three. He added that with that extra money, people could invest in homes to make them more energy efficient and winterized. If there is no justice for the crimes committed, then we still have a big problem in Texas because we believe in the rule of law in this state, O'Rourke said. There's a state law about deceptive trade practices, and what it says is that if during a declared disaster, like we had last year, if anyone tries to price gouge or charge exorbitant rates for our basic necessities, they're breaking the law. And specifically cited in the code is gas and fuel. O'Rourke said those who made more than they typically would on gas and those who broke their contracts with local utilities would pay the consequences for those actions. Point number four. He said as governor, he would bring back the $11 billion that were illegally made and return the money to the people of Texas. His fifth point would be to implement an independent market monitor for gas in the state of Texas. There is an independent market monitor for electricity in the state that tries to keep everyone honest so that the system works well and people aren't shocked by any unforeseen prices, he said. There is no independent market monitor for gas. It is literally the Wild West. Some of these gas supply and pipeline companies have near monopoly power over their customers. They can charge whatever they want to. O'Rourke added, he doesn't want people to think of the power grid problem as Democrats, Republicans, or independents, but in terms of what is best for Texas. I think if we do that, this energy-rich, energy-proud state, and nowhere is more proud or rich than right here in the Permian Basin, I think can be the unrivaled energy leader in the world and never again have to worry when the temperature drops, he said. Other local politicians also made an appearance during O'Rourke's visit. Andrews County Attorney Sean Galloway, who attended O'Rourke's visit to Midland in December, was once again in the audience. Casey Gray, a candidate for Texas House of Representatives District 81, was outside the Woodson Park Community Center where the event was being held with a Come and Take It banner, gun, and camouflage-painted vehicle. Odessa Mayor Javier Hoven and Ector County Commissioner Precinct 4 Armando Rodriguez were in attendance inside the community center during the event. This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled Road Construction is a Sign of Progress by Stuart Doreen, Midland Reporter-Telegram editor. Thank you to those officials who led the road bond effort and the residents of Midland who passed the initiative in 2017. One day, we will look back and say it was worth it. It just might not be soon. It is mandatory to write this because there are social media posts and comments about how tired people are of construction in the city. Even city officials have admitted being weary of the ongoing road rehab taking place. I say keep it going. It wasn't long ago, 2019 to be specific, that we had at least one mayoral candidate taking the city to task about the lack of inaction and how it was criminal that a person couldn't drive across town without causing damage to their car because of the condition of the roads. We read more of that sentiment online. Here's a newsflash. Midland is an old community. It also is a community that was not designed to handle the amount of traffic that currently exists, especially in the older parts of the city and into and out of downtown. Here's a second observation. any road rehab project taking place now is likely needed because of the lack of maintenance that happened over a two-decade period from 1990 to 2010. We reduced city budgets at the expense of our roads. Growing up in Dallas, it was easy to be frustrated with the never-ending construction on roads like Central Expressway. Now, when I return to the Metroplex, I marvel at what those city planners knew and what that pain would mean for residents for decades to come. You don't even have to travel that far to get the point. The same can be said for numerous projects around Midland, like the expansion of State Highway 349 to La Mesa, State Highway 158 to Garden City, and the turn lane on the southbound service road at the intersection of State Highway 191 and Loop 250. Construction was annoying, but the end result made for a better driving experience. That is entirely the point of what the road bond will do. The same can be said of increasing annual city road budgets and other transportation funding sources, like the spending of Midland Development Corporation funds on projects such as Loop 250 overpasses. One day, our drives across town will be easier. One day, we will have that northern half of the loop made up of the freeways and overpasses that planners dreamed of decades ago. There will even be an interstate through Midland with three lanes going in each direction, and with one-way service roads and exits and entrances that prove beneficial to traffic flow. I might not be around to see it, but that doesn't mean it is not worth doing. Yes, there will be considerable inconvenience when Garfield Road, Big Spring Drive, and Main Street eventually go through their scheduled rehabilitations. When that happens, I say become familiar with alternative routes in and out of downtown, like Front Street, Wall Street, La Mesa Road, and Fairgrounds Road. I know there are many people who will be happy when their commute no longer includes an orange cone or merging traffic sign. To many, they mean additional time added to their trip. I get that. But to me, they mean something totally different. Progress. This is the obituary column. Tuesday, February 8th. Anita Elms. Anita Childress Elms passed from this world on February 4th, 2022. Anita was preceded in death by her son, Stephen Elms, in 1988, her sister, Dora Smith, in 2008, and her husband, Bill Elms, in 2012. Celebrating her life are her children, Tracy, Terry, and Clark, and their families, as well as sisters Jackie Bell and Janie Widner, and extended family, all of whom loved Aunt Nita. A family burial will take place on Friday, February 11th at 2 p.m., and a memorial service at 3 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home, followed by a reception at the Odessa Country Club. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts may be made to the Permian Basin Rehabilitation Center or to the Texas Ex's Stephen Wade Elms Memorial Scholarship. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Christina Reyna. Christina Reyna, 65, of Odessa, passed away on Monday, January 31st in Odessa. She was born in Stanton on May 31, 1956, to the late Jesus and Beninga Montez. She married Johnny David Reyna on September 25, 2000. She was preceded in death by her husband, Johnny David Reyna, her parents Jesus and Beninga Montez, her sisters Celia Armendariz and Ruth Ramirez, her brothers Luis Montez and Ramon Montez, and her nephew and godson, Edward Armendariz. She is survived by her sisters, Isabel Mejia, Angela de la Rosa, Francis Perez, and her brothers Luis Montez and Ruben Montez, all of Stanton. Her sister, Aida Montez of Santa Maria, California. Her brother-in-law and wife, Daniel and Andrea Reyna of Ohio. Her stepsons and their wives, Daniel and Naomi Reyna, and Johnny and Lisa Reyna of Dallas, and her grandkids. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, February 9th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Stanton. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home in Stanton. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Iona Vasacek. Atha Iona Lampley Vasacek passed on February 3rd, just before her 92nd birthday. She came into this world February 9th, 1930, in Benton, Illinois. Iona was predeceased by her father, Rolla Paul Lampley, her mother, Alma Irene Sutton, her brother, Donald Lampley, her sister, Winona Arnold. She is survived by her son, Michael R. Vasacek of Midland, and his children, Kristen, Dallas, Ashley, New York City, Lance Ashley Midland, Savannah C. Wagoner, Donnie, Dallas, Nash Cantwell, Dallas, her son, Mark Vasacek, Sharon of Burlington, Iowa, as well as multiple grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. Viewing will be Thursday, February 10th at Ellis Funeral Home. Service will be Friday, February 11th at 11 a.m., Christ Church Anglican, 5501 North Midkiff Road. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com. James Sykes. James Barry Sykes was welcomed into the eternal presence of his Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on Friday, January 28th at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. Barry was born in Big Spring to Abbott B. and Melba Preston Sykes on July 14, 1954. Barry is predeceased by his father and mother, his brother Stephen Sykes, his maternal and paternal grandparents, and many extended family members. He is survived by his older sister, Judy Dalton, John of Cloudcroft, New Mexico, his youngest brother, Nathan Sykes of Providence, Rhode Island, as well as many nieces and nephews, aunts and cousins. The memorial service for Barry Sykes will be at 1 p.m. Wednesday, February 9th at Grace Christian Fellowship in Odessa. In lieu of flowers, contributions can be made in Barry's name to these scholarship programs: Barry Sykes Memorial Scholarship Award, Permian Football Booster Club, Barry Sykes Memorial Endowed Scholarship, University of Texas Permian Basin. For more information or online giving, please contact Marisol Kreisman at 432-552-2806. Death Notices. Bobby Scott. Bobby Scott, 96, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, February 5th. Graveside services will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday, February 12th at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Fred Thummel. Fred Thummel, 91, of Midland, passed away February 6th. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Sunday, February 20th at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Memorial Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, February 21st at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Joyce Hooser. Joyce Lynn Hooser, 77, of Midland, passed away Saturday, February 5th. Funeral service will be Wednesday, February 9th at 11 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Susan Wright. Susan L. Wright, 76, passed away February 3rd. Celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, February 10th at Crestview Baptist Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Olga Vega. Olga Vega, 63, of Midland, passed away February 2nd. Olga was born April 12, 1958 in San Antonio to Reyes and Angelita Lara. She is survived by her daughter Angie Hosso of Dallas, as well as three grandsons. She is also survived by her sisters Sarah Brito and Estella Brito of Midland, and brothers Bernard Guerrero of San Antonio, Ray Guerrero of Germany, Ricky Brito, Martin Brito, and Homer Brito, all of Midland, along with numerous nieces and nephews. She is preceded in death by her parents Reyes Lara and Angelita Lara, her brother Ramon Lara, and sister Alicia Lara. A public visitation for Olga will be held Tuesday, February 8th at 5 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. A chapel service will occur Wednesday, February 9th from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com.
Good morning. This is Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, February 8, 2022. Board to discuss filling vacancy. Filling the District 7 vacancy on the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees, discussing the proposed bond issue, and an update on the strategic plan are a few of the items the panel will discuss during a work session set for 6 p.m. today in the first floor boardroom of the Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Nelson Minyard, who served on the District 7 spot, resigned in January. He moved out of Odessa. Minyard had been on the board since 2013, and his current term expires in 2025. At the last board meeting, trustees agreed to appoint someone to fill out Minyard's term. Mike Atkins, attorney for ECISD, said anyone that is appointed will serve until the next election cycle, which would be May 2023. If that person chose to run, or anyone else chose to run, they would fill a term from 2023 to 2025. The district could have also held a special election. ECISD also is considering having a bond election in May. Priorities identified by the Bond Advisory Committee were a facility life cycle repairs, a new career and technical education facility, technology upgrades, and a new third comprehensive high school. The estimated cost would come at about $416 million. The board is continuing to work on cutting that amount. Trustees will also hear a quarterly update on the district's strategic plan. Supplemental agenda material said the district began work on the strategic plan, The Future Is Now, in March 2019 to guide the work of the district through 2024. Topics covered today will include systematizing equity-based funding, implementing a learning management system, and high-impact tutoring. Trustees will also meet in closed session to consider the superintendent's recommendation to terminate the probationary contract of Jovan Jacob Lopez Prondo, the agenda said. They will also hear a presentation on humanities. Shrimp Fest will benefit Ellen Noel Art Museum. The Ellen Noel Art Museum is bringing back its annual Shrimp Fest this month with tasty treats that help benefit the museum. The event is scheduled for general admission at 7 p.m. February 28th at Building G at the Ector County Coliseum. Shrimp Fest is a Cajun-style shrimp fest that includes all-you-can-eat shrimp with all the fixings. The event also includes a silent auction and a live auction. Sponsor tables are available, and there will be an exclusive sponsor-only cocktail reception from 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. on the day of the event before the general admission comes in. General admission prices are $50 in advance and $55 at the door. We are so excited, chairman of the Shrimp Fest fundraiser, Sandra Blade, said. This is our 35th annual Shrimp Fest. There's a lot of hype going on with that. Last year we did a virtual event, so we're excited to have a live event. We cook over 1,500 pounds of shrimp, which is pretty exciting. The live auction is going to have things like vacation getaways, which is exciting, as well as mini jewelry and so many fun things. We're also going to do a raffle, which is pretty exciting. It does support the Ellen Noel Art Museum, which is our largest fundraiser. The art museum does so much for our community. The fundraiser helps support the 9 to 12 rotating exhibitions at the museum, as well as educational programs, free community events, and maintenance of sensory garden and grounds. Last year, the event was only the auction, as there was no shrimp or any other food. We just did some auction items last year, and it was online as well as the raffles, Blade said. We had some great sponsors that assisted us in sponsoring the different children's events that are pretty exciting too, so that's how we did it last year. Blades talked about having the festival back in person this year. "Wow, the hype is amazing," Blade said. "I think everyone is so tired of being in, and they're ready to get out, ready to have fun. We do have sponsor tables available as well as general admission tickets. We're excited about this event." The Shrimp Fest recipe is based on recipes used by Pascal Manel Restaurant in New Orleans. Head chef Gabe Gruel has helped prepare the shrimp every year for almost 20 years now. "It's such a community effort," Gruwell said. "We raise a ton of money in one night for the museum. What we work on all year long culminates in one night to where we're able to give a ton of money to the museum. My favorite part is the camaraderie and the feeling of the community stepping up and pulling off a huge event. That means something." Gruwell works with a cooking crew of about 30 to 40 people. Annually, Shrimp Fest serves about 1,000 people. Approximately 1,200 pounds of shrimp are cooked and served. About 150 volunteers give their time to help during the event, and 150 to 200 area merchants and artists donate items for the auctions. For more information and for tickets, go to https://www.noelartmuseum.org/shrimpfest. If you go, what? Shrimp Fest. When? General admission entry at 7 p.m. February 28th. Sponsor only cocktail reception from 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. Where? Ector County Coliseum, Building G. Ticket prices $50 in advance, $55 at the door. Tickets online at https://www.noelartmuseum.org/shrimpfest. Bronze medalist to speak at scholarship banquet. Natalie Hines will get a chance to share her life story when she returns to the Permian Basin as a guest speaker at the Black Cultural Council of Odessa's banquet in February. The Midland native Olympic swimmer, who took home the bronze medal from last year's games in Tokyo, will talk about her experience and hopes to inspire the scholars who will be honored at the event. It'll be the second time that Hines, who is a graduate of Midland High, will be making a public appearance in the Permian Basin. She also came back in October. "I'm really excited," Hines said in a phone interview. "I came back in Midland in October. It was a good experience with the homecoming and the warm welcome from my city. This will be pretty much the same, and I'm looking forward to it. It's a little change in my schedule to go back to my roots and inspire the next generation." The scholarship banquet, which will be titled An Evening with the Stars, will take place at 7:30 p.m. February 19th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Hines graduated from Midland High in 2012 and attended the University of Florida, where she graduated with a major in communications for a Bachelor of Arts in 2016. After missing out on the 2016 Olympics in Rio, Hines took a break from the sport before making her return in 2018. She says her speech next month in Odessa will focus on the lessons that she has learned from her comeback in 2018 to now. I feel like that now I'm just back into the grind of things and just what I learned, Hines said. Going to the Olympics was an amazing experience, but I feel like the experience that topped that was just getting there. I think that's one of the biggest lessons that I want to convey. Goals are very important, but you also need to pay attention to the journey in which it takes you to get there. Being big in public speaking, she said she is honored to be able to speak at the scholarship banquet. It's always awesome when people ask me to speak publicly, and I love to help others in any way that I can. So if I can use my words to help other people maybe have a leg up on the experiences that they're going to have, I feel like that's something I'm going to look forward to. I'm really excited to honor all the kids who will be receiving this honor and share my story. I think it's a pretty unique story, so I feel like the more that hear and if it resonates with them, I'll feel like I've done my job. The Olympics were originally supposed to take place in 2020, but were pushed back a year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. During the one-year hiatus before the Tokyo Games could take place, Hines said it wasn't too big of a deal to wait for the Olympics time trials, saying that it gave her more time to prepare. I feel like it was kind of 50-50, Hines said. I felt like I was kind of at peace because I didn't think I was ready in 2020. It was kind of a blessing in disguise. But there were days when I felt lost in terms of, what if I hold on another year and don't even make the team? So that was always in the back of my mind. But I always came to the conclusion that I literally did everything that I could to make the team, and if I made it, I made it, and if I didn't, then I gave my all. I took into mindfulness in being able to focus on myself, and I feel like that helped me when we go to trials. Everyone was in the same boat. Everyone had an extra year, so it's all about how you're going to respond. However, the wait proved to be worth it, as Hines qualified for the U.S. Olympic team in the 4x100-meter freestyle relay team last summer. I feel like that's bigger than a one-sentence answer, Hines said of her experience in Japan last year. It was amazing, to say the least. It was kind of a dream the whole time, but to be able to put the American flag on your cap and be part of the relay team that's representing the whole country, I feel like that's pretty riveting, to say the least. I feel like I learned so much, just going to trials and making the team, and throughout the camp, being surrounded by the world's best swimmers and coaches was just an amazing experience. I feel like after taking a break after the Olympics, I feel much more equipped to my training and nutrition and everything else. She swam in both the prelims and the finals in the relays last year. Her relay team placed 5th overall to qualify for the finals. During her prelims relay, Hines clocked in the fastest individual time with a split of 53.28 seconds. Her finals relay teammates consisted of Abby Witzel, Simone Manuel, and Erica Brown as they swam a time of 3 minutes and 32.81 seconds, which was enough to earn the bronze medal. I wasn't expecting to come home with a medal, so that was a nice cherry on top to a dream season that I had, Hines said. It's like when you think you're going to feel a certain way when you get something and you don't feel that way. Getting the medal was a dream, but now I think of it as a checkpoint in my career and I know what it took to get that medal. Now I have to do that plus more to get more and to be more efficient with what I'm doing. I don't even have it. It's just a physical thing. All the experiences are in my brain. I think that's most important. But it's still cool just to say that I was able to be on the team to do that because you never know when it's going to happen again. With that extra year, it just means that much more. 10 students from Odessa will be honored at the scholarship banquet, including Corey Bass, Bedrick Beatty, Eric Jamar Brooks, Calvion Calicut, Amaria Green, Alex Lampton, Brookeen Pruitt, Taria Stewart, and Kenazia Williams. It's a great group of kids. BCCO President Joe Ann Davenport Littleton said, "Some of them have college credits. It's a gifted group of young people. They're looking forward to the event and to hear Natalie's story. Each of the students will be receiving scholarships. Every year we try to build on the previous year, and most of the time the program basically depends on the students and the speaker," Littleton said. Littleton said she was happy that the BCCO was able to bring in Hines as the guest speaker. "Her story is one that, as a board, we feel like will help those stars in life," Littleton said. "Her story will help all of us in life. It's going to be a great time. We want the whole community to come out and listen to her." The BCCO has been putting on the scholarship banquet since 1999. Each year, we've had 10-plus stars that, as a board member, you can select the student that you would like to honor, Littleton said. Their criteria is that they're a student from ECISD and that they have a 2.5 GPA and that they're active in their church and active in their school. Each student that we select receives scholarships. Since 1999, we've been giving thousands and thousands of dollars to aid these young people as they go off to college. The ticket prices are $50. It's a black tie event, and no tickets will be sold at the door. February 10th is the deadline to get a ticket. For more information, call 432-853-1344 or 432-212-6700. If you go, what? An Evening with the Stars, Black Cultural Council of Odessa Scholarship Banquet. When? 7:30 p.m. February 19th. Where? Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Ticket prices, $50. Deadline is February 10th. Tickets won't be sold at the door. For more information, call 432-853-1344 or 432-212-6700. COVID-19 News, by the numbers, COVID in the Basin. Ector County, 36,403 total cases, 625 deaths. Midland County, 35,619 total cases, 456 deaths. Texas, 6,416,762 total cases, 80,700 deaths. U.S. cases, 76,415,622 total confirmed and 899,756 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. MCH releases COVID numbers. Medical Center Hospital has released its inpatient COVID numbers as of 8:30 a.m. Monday. 46 COVID patients in-house, med-surg non-critical 31 COVID patients, critical care 15 COVID patients, 9 unvaccinated, 3 vaccinated, 3 unknown. 10 COVID patients on ventilator, 6 unvaccinated, 2 vaccinated, 2 unknown. Age ranges of COVID patients, 29 years old to 95 years old. COVID patients from outside Ector County, 1 from Albuquerque, New Mexico, 1 from Big Lake, 1 from Crane, 1 from Fort Stockton, 1 from Gardendale, 5 from Midland, 1 from Seymour. Free drive-through COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR test drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, test will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. The City of Odessa, in partnership with DOCS Health, have scheduled drive-through COVID-19 testing from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Sunday at the UTPB Community Sports Fields parking lot located at 191 and Loop 338. The entrance will be located on the 191 Access Road, 42nd Street, and exit will be on Loop 338. The site will have both PCR test and rapid antigen test available. This will be the second COVID-19 testing site set up by the city with no out-of-pocket cost. No appointment needed, however, online registration is available. Testing is subject to daily availability of material. PCR test results are expected within 2 to 3 days in most cases, and rapid test results will be a 15 to 20 minute wait at the site, or you can receive your results via text message. To pre-register, visit docshealthtesting.com or text DOCSTX to 41411. Health insurance information will be requested if available. For more information, call the DOCS Health Call Center at 267-362-5207.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.